What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of This Moment. This podcast serves as a transatlantic bridge connecting Sweden to the United States, Stockholm to Harlem, and BIPOC communities across the globe. We are all a part of that one and same diaspora. All things food, music, culture, current events, troubles, and triumphs. That's what we deal with, analyze, talk about, ventilate. And for those who may not know, I'm Jason Diakite. I'm based out here in Stockholm. And as always, I'm here with my dear friend and brother, Chef Marcus Samuelson out of Harlem, New York. Marcus, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Good, good, good. You know, it's spring in New York. And it's one of my favorite times. Normally around this time, we're getting ready for Harlem Eat Up because we are still in the pandemic. You know, we're definitely not going to do a full Eat Up this year. We might do something on TV or online and later on this summer. But normally May means two things for me. It's my sister's birthday, which also is, May 6th is the day when we arrived to Sweden. And Harlem Eat Up. So, yeah.
I could see by the flag that's hanging in the background that you're back home. You're in Harlem. And I will say, you know, it sounds cliche, but man, I love New York in the spring. Having said that, I also love New York in the summer. And New York in the fall is like the best time of all. The only thing I would say I prefer to be in New York than in Stockholm is during the winter.
I would agree with that.
In Sweden,
it's tough. It's tough in New York, yeah. But it, you know, a Swedish winter
it's tough.
But Sweden is built for winter. Mm. So the one thing Sweden does very well is winter. New York, every year we know there's going to be snow, and each year we're surprised by it.
I know. And I living in New York, each time, and there's a lot of focus on the weather in New York in a whole different way than you have in Sweden. And each time there was a blizzard rolling in, like there's going to be a blizzard on Friday. The blizzard has a name.
Yeah,
it could be, you know, that it has a boy's or a girl's name, or haircut. The Arctic blast is coming.
Yeah.
You know, it always has a very cool like title and everybody knows about it and everybody kind of hunkers down. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Sweden, you know, it snows and people still go to school and you know, they go to the shops. Nothing really changes. And sometimes it dumps, you know, sometimes it dumps in Stockholm. It snows a lot and people still go to school and the buses still run on time. That never ceased to amaze me with living in New York.
I remember the first snowstorm I lived with through New York and I was like, when is the snowstorm? And they were like, this is a snowstorm. I was like, that's not a snowstorm. That's snow coming down. There is a difference.
That's just snow falling. And it is winter. But on the flip side of that, when spring hits in Sweden,
everybody comes out.
It's amazing because people will come out like, it could be 42 degrees and sunny, and people will be in their t-shirts in the park, like sunning themselves. Yeah. It's really an amazing thing to see.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
See,
Jason, it's National Barbecue Month, which means pull up with a grill.
And Marcus, you're Swedish too, so you know that barbecue, the name barbecue is not something commonly used in Sweden. Here we call it grilling.
Well, stop. This is very, very important, right? Because as a chef, I was always annoyed when, you know, people talk about barbecuing in Sweden. I was like, wait a minute, you don't really barbecue. You put stuff on the grill, and that's not the same as barbecuing. You know, like barbecue.
So you're telling me barbecue and grill is not the same thing?
It's definitely not the same thing. And as a complete, I mean, wow. You are definitely.
I mean, I know that barbecue in the States, when I have that, it tastes a lot better than grill in Sweden. Well, I will say
I mean, I think the word grilling, right? And we call it grilling with our friends. It's a better word because that's actually what Swedish people are doing, right? It's enjoying with their friends, bring some burgers, some, you know, some guys bring some high-end meat and put it on. But barbecue is completely different, you know, and we're going to go through in details with this when our dear friend Rodney Scott, you know, his family started Scott's Barbecue. And, you know, like what I think about Scott's Barbecue in the Carolinas with Rodney Scott running it now, it's generational families. It's part of, it's like if your father is a jazz musician and you're a jazz musician, it's part of your bones. Do you know what I mean? And this idea of barbecue is all over the world. The Japanese, they smoke on low heat. You think about Korean, and you think about really Mongolia, for example, very different techniques, right? Because meat is very expensive. So, you know, the lesser cuts is something that you just can't throw away. And these are the cuts that actually lend itself perfect to barbecue. And also what differentiates many culture too are the sides, the sauces and the sides, right? When you think about Korean barbecue, you eat with rice. You think about Carolina barbecue, very often there would be cornbread or there would be beans, there would be collard, even mac and cheese, right? Again, Swedish grilling is really more of nature. I'm outside, I'm cooking with my friend, putting some dogs on, maybe even putting
it's
some...
It's a lot more basic.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's yeah. I think it's also this idea of cooking outside is liberating for everybody, right?
Absolutely.
It becomes something we can all participate in. So OG, I would say Africa, obviously the continent has been part of it, and then the Caribbean, and then the southern states in America, but also Mexico, because northern part of Mexico, huge part of barbacoa culture, which very often doesn't actually get enough props. But barbacoa on the Mexican side, amazing.
I can imagine. When you say cooking outside, though, I think both of when I traveled in Ghana, but also, for example, going to my friend Mika's mom's house in Addis, the kitchen is outside.
Yes.
Where there is a kitchen area inside, but the fire is outside and all the cooking is done outside.
Yes.
And what was most amazing to me with that, Marcus, and was that there would be kids Zion's age helping around the open flame, around the fire.
Yes.
Handing, you know, handing Mika's mama stuff and holding pots and pour, you know, bringing pots with water and, you know, whatever she was cooking in it. That I thought was very impressive. Just seeing to handle a kitchen outside and also whoever's there, no matter how old or young, is helping out.
When I met my youngest sister, she was exactly Zion's age. And about the same height as Zion, but her physique, very, very different. I mean, she had muscles on her arm. And I was like, I was floored by that. Because she woke up early every morning. And her part of her job was to walk with her sister for an hour and a half walk to get water every day, right? And the tasks that kids are doing in not just Africa, but in many parts of the world at an early, early age. So that's why it's hard kind of to compare a 12-year-old or 5-year-old, you know, from Africa and a 5-year-old from Sweden, let's say United States. All those things that you were talking about, right? I just get that image and that picture in my head because you're right. It's an activity that if you're going to eat, you participate. You either participate in getting the animal or you participate in making the fire or cleaning up. But if you're eating off this plate, you're participating.
And I imagine that becomes the celebration of actually eating is something. Not only was everybody involved in it, because what you're saying is, you know, Mika's stepdad would go get the meat from the market. So that was his job. Then he'd bring the meat back. Mom was making the fire. The other kids around the house, cousins and so forth, were helping out, doing dishes, setting table. Like, everybody's involved in it. And then when it comes to the point where they sit down and eat, that's something that's a, you know, every meal is a celebration. Mm-hmm.
So Orthodox Easter was May 2nd, right? Which means also a breaking of a fast, which means that you eat meat for the first time in months, right? Which that means that if you go back then 10 days, so someone like in Mickey's family, someone would go and get the goat in the city or outside in the countryside at a market, maybe last Wednesday or Tuesday. Then the slaughter would probably happen on Saturday night because they don't, you know, they don't want to touch meat even during in the middle of fasting.
A fast.
And then they would hang it the whole day. And then somewhere around noon or early, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, they would start cooking it. And then around 3 o'clock, everybody would get together and eat. And that idea, when you break fast, you haven't had meat for 60 days or almost 90 days. The meat tastes amazing, but it's also a celebration culture around it, right? So, you know, all over, not only Ethiopia, but all over the in Orthodox places, it would be breaking of fast, and the celebration around lamb and goat would be very, very big.
In the Islamic world, Ramadan still happens. In the Orthodox world, the fast still happens. Are Western societies, are we missing on a health component by not fasting when traditionally this is what humans have been doing as far back as we can, as we have recorded more or less?
Well, I fast with my wife because I think it's fun to do something together to share that moment, right? But also the breaking of it is amazing, and I wish like more people would at some point
but I'm also thinking of the health benefit, I guess. That fasting may have its roots in that meat was scarce at a certain time of year, but also that it might have health benefits to just not eat meat, you know, maybe eat meat for 10 or 11 months of the year, but for 1 or 2 months, you don't do it.
There's so many benefits with it because it's also enjoyable to, once you take meat out of the thought process, you become much more creative with other non-animal protein, right? You start thinking about beans, lentil, chickpeas in a completely different way. You start thinking about other dishes you could make, and otherwise actually you're actually limited by having, always thinking about a meat or a fish, right? Because that becomes the main proportion. And the way we are eating now, it's fairly new. Right. It's maybe post-Second World War this was developed, that meat or fish became center of the plate. Up until that point, it was absolutely the opposite. The potato, rice, the beans were the center of the plate. Of course.
Absolutely.
And then if you got a little meat, great, but there was other things that were center of the plate. And
yeah, well, that's why, you know, if my dad was cooking black-eyed peas, there might be, you know, a bone in there.
Yeah,
like
beautiful.
Or a couple of oxtails.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the main dish were the beans. And whatever little piece of meat in there is just the flavoring, actually. Yeah. And maybe what he gets, you know. Or actually, my dad always had the philosophy that the youngest gets served first. Because he spent a lot of years in West Africa where it was vice versa, where the oldest get served first. So he always did it in reverse at his house.
Peace. I love that. Being the youngest, I love that. I missed out on that. But I do think, like, if you, the way you talk about that dish, right? You think about how very often in Southern style, a lot of black cooks does collard greens, for example, very often with turkey necks in it, right? Just a little bit of turkey necks in the bottom, or a little bit of ham hocks in the collards, and it, you know, makes it taste better. But that was the meal. That wasn't a side dish. That was the meal. And, you know, you were lucky if you got a little bit of pieces of meat in there. But I do think that as we are thinking about green climate change, how we cook, how we eat, and how we lower our animal protein taking as a collective is one of the biggest homeworks we have to do, and we have to rethink how we think about meat and fish as well, because we, you know, we are
how
fish
we eat and what we're using
and how we the process.
So we've established the fact that grill season is huge in Sweden. It's a big deal in the United States around the year, because I'm guessing the biggest barbecue enthusiasts, they're not taking any fast. There's no break in that. Barbecue's 365, I'm sure. They're two different things, but the want is to get to the same. You're outside, you're eating. It's about celebrating, I don't know, the season, the fact that you can be outside, definitely here in the Nordics.
One of my favorite times when we had guest chef at Red Rooster was when we invited Rodney Scott. And the way he cooks it, it's really that level of mystique, and it brings you back. Imagine he's cooking the way somebody cooks 2,000 years ago, right? There's not a trend coming or going. He's cooking in a way. He's honoring
the method, the methodology is just ancient.
Yeah, that is 5 years older, five times older than the United States itself. And then you also, don't sleep on the Caribbean. When we think about jerk, right? Jerk pork in Jamaica, jerk chicken in Jamaica, right? That's all barbecuing too. Right, slow, smoked slowly, and they smoke it on this incredible wood, and listening to ska and reggae and reggaeton and ragamuffin and all that stuff. So for me, barbecue also have sounds to it that is absolutely amazing. So I'm going to call my buddy Rodney Scott, right? And he's going to give us the technical, but also, you know, how he grew up with it.
Well, my my uncle and my cousins, yeah, they live in Baltimore. I know my uncle will eat him some barbecue. However, I doubt that he ever like creates it on his own. But I'm sure he can speak at length about how much he loves it.
I would love to hear from your family two different versions at least.
Let me hit him up.
Even if it's completely out there, so what? But it just shows you, it evokes an emotion, right? It's almost like speaking soccer to somebody from Brazil or England, right? So we think about Brazilian soccer, you think about it from Joga Bonito, and you, right away you think about the beach and you get excited. And then you think about someone that is passionate in England, equally passionate about soccer as someone in Brazil. Just two different styles,
same game,
right? And then let's follow the, somebody from Germany in soccer. Very, very different. So it's
a good comparison, because even within Europe, the styles of how a Spanish team plays or an Italian team plays or a German or a British team, they differ a lot.
Very different.
I don't know anything about barbecue, and I know a little more about soccer, but not too much. I would say you're a master of both, Marcus. Would you say that you ever barbecue?
So I want to be very clear. I'm going to be very clear about this. So there's two cuisines that I adore and love, both sushi and barbecue, and I'm master from none.
Like, okay, this is but it's good. Oh. It's just be honest with yourself. Yeah.
Oh no, and
you know where to go to get the good stuff.
Yeah, and I hang out with those guys constantly. The only time you really see me like acting like a fan around chefs is with sushi guys and barbecue guys, because it's so foreign from what I grew up with, but I love it so much. So let me tell you a little bit about Rodney Scott. When you think about barbecue in this country, it really relates back to Black culture, and specifically to one of the masters of that is chef, pitmaster Rodney Scott. And he learned it from his uncle, and he learned it from his father, and he took it from a very small place to now sharing it to the world. We'd cooked many, many times together in Harlem, and now launching his book. So I hope you enjoy this, the one and only Mr. Rodney Scott.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Congratulations. Got a new book. It's out there. Talk to me about it.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be on. It's a pleasure to talk with you again. Thank you for the congratulations. Man, this new book has been amazing. It's been a whole new journey as a guy from a small town in Hemingway coming into a world of, you know, cookbooks.
So, Rodney, for our listeners who might not know, what is a pitmaster, Rodney?
You know, my definition of what a pitmaster is a person that can cook in the pits, that doesn't really need a gauge. They don't really need a thermometer, if you will. They can touch. They can feel. They know how to control their fire and their wood without any instruments or any assistance. It's basically using what you have to a skill level as if you had everything you needed.
I love that. Who taught you about queuing in your family? And give us a little bit about the backstory about your family and where you guys started.
Okay, so my family started in barbecue back in 1972. My mom and dad moved back to South Carolina from Philadelphia a year after I was born, and they opened this general store. And my dad's uncle knew how to cook whole hogs. So my dad's uncle would come and cook whole hogs for him every Thursday to serve sandwiches as just an extra boost to the business. And, you know, being a kid, I remember Uncle Thomas doing these little cookouts on Thursdays to pull the hog off at 6 o'clock. And we would serve sandwiches until we closed. So I kind of learned from my dad, and I got a couple of pointers from Uncle Thomas. You know, he would say little things like, put the lemon in the sauce to give it that twang.
So give us an idea visually, you know, barbecuing, that's required outside cooking and mopping overnight. I mean, it's very, very laborious, right? So what does that shed look like? And tell me about the mopping tradition, all of it.
So just to give you a picture of what we did in cooking this whole hog, just imagine a shed covering mostly with a barrel out back. A huge burn barrel is what we call it, where we put the wood in and burn it down in the hot coals. And we would use just the coals to cook the hog. So this burn barrel had to be outside just so the smoke wouldn't fill the room. And you would have just enough covering to cook your hog, whether it was raining or sunshining, whatever it was outside, you were exposed to the elements almost through the entire cook. So it was kind of like a bunch of people hanging around a fire if it's wintertime, cooking this one hog, and it's just like shovel coals for a little while, put it under there, and then you sit down and you wait a few minutes and you go back and you shovel again. It was an ongoing process of just imagine people sitting around a fire, telling lies, drinking whiskey and beer, and cooking this hog for 12 hours.
No, that sounds awesome. But that's everything you talk about there. It's also you honoring a tradition, your family gets together. It's not just about eating the sandwich. You know, that's for the customer, maybe. But for you guys, it's what you do as a culture. The month of May is actually barbecue month in America. And, you know, in Europe, people are now saying that they're barbecuing. And I always say, no, you're not queuing. You're grilling. You're putting stuff on a grill, and that's not barbecuing. So can you explain to us, as the master of this, what's the difference between barbecue and putting stuff on the grill?
There's two things to remember. Barbecuing is low and slow, which means you're going to be there for hours. You know, it's not going to be a quick fire and you're done. You know, you can't take a whole hog and grill it. You know, you can't take a brisket and grill it. It's going to be a process there. That's when all of those people are gathered around drinking and telling those lies that I spoke of. Now, if you're grilling, you're throwing food over an open flame. It's real quick. It might be 20 minutes. It may be 30 minutes. Grilling, for example, is a steak. You throw a steak down. And once you throw that steak down, you have maybe 20 minutes with a steak, depending on how hot your fire is when you're grilling. So grilling is kind of quick. It's like a quick fire, as opposed to barbecue being low and slow. And it's usually a larger cut of beef or pork or chicken.
So that's the other thing that I want to explain. So you're Carolinas, so you're mostly pork. And then as you go further in to Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, it becomes more beef. The sauces also vary. Break it down for our listeners what Carolina barbecue is and let's say what Texas barbecue is, just so they have a geographic understanding of it.
Just to give the listeners an open view of what Carolina barbecue is. Carolina barbecue is mostly a type of sauce, if you will, which usually goes on chicken or pork. So when you're cooking in the Carolinas, almost everybody's cooking pork instead of any other proteins. So the majority of barbecue in the Carolinas will be pork, as opposed to Texas, beef is one of the most popular things that you'll ever hear along with barbecuing in Texas, as well as Oklahoma. You start to hear more beef when you go further west. The Carolinas being on the coast, you hear about a lot of pork cooking that goes on.
And then there's also, what are great sides with barbecue? Like what are must have on Rodney's list of sides, for example? What should we have?
Man, Rodney's list of sides will consist of baked beans. You got to have some coleslaw with that barbecue. You got to have some collard greens. Now, I wasn't always a huge fan of collard greens, but you know, lately I've learned to enjoy them. The way that we prepare them has gotten me kind of captured. Collard greens. And if you feel like it, cornbread. Did I say mac and cheese? Oh, my goodness. Mac and cheese as well. All of these things are great sides to go along with barbecue. And if you got any room left for dessert, some banana pudding, extra cookies.
So I love this, right? Because it's a vibe, right? It's definitely outdoor. You know, with the beans and everything, it takes time, right? It's not something you do in one day. You might start the beans on Tuesday. You might soak them, then rinse them, and then you cook them. So it's all things that takes time. But it kind of also fits in this Southern tradition where not to say you have more time, but it's a slower pace of life. That's why I think barbecuing, it doesn't come from the North for many reasons. And we can never nail it. As much as we invested in the equipment and all of it, I always like, please, please, there's no one in the, you know, north of Virginia that can beat any guy south of Virginia.
It's something about the South, man. I don't know if it's the hard work that a lot of people put in preparing for the barbecue, or again, the fellowship that you get when everybody kind of stands around when it's going on. But there's just something different about barbecue in the South than you would find up North. It's more of a laid back lifestyle. Everybody's kind of kicked back in the chairs, you know. They're all just telling some of the biggest lies ever told about how fast they were when they were younger, how good they were at playing sports. And it's just something different in the South.
Can you tell me also a little bit about the mop? Because the mop should have a name. It's an icon in the family by itself. It's a cuz at this point, right? What's the mop? Who is he? Who came up with the mop? Tell us about that.
So the mop. Yes, I said mop. Understand mop. Like you see what people use the mop before. The first time I've encountered the mop was with Uncle Thomas. As a kid, I noticed he opened this brand new mop and he dunked it in the sauce. And as he dipped it in the sauce, he pulled it out and it drained and he let it drain over the hog. And he just gave it, you know, a nice little drop and dipped back in. And I remember asking him, why are you doing that? And he says, this will put the sauce all over it. So the mop is the same technique that we use to this very day.
So Rodney, I have to ask this, besides your own family's legacy, what are some other barbecue, maybe a place outside the Carolinas that you enjoy, that you love eating barbecue from?
Man, so if I'm outside of the Carolinas, well, if North Carolina counts, Sam Jones barbecue, I love the way he chops his skin into his hog. So it's a little crunch in every few bites. I got to admit, I did enjoy Joe's in Oklahoma. Arthur Bryant's out in Kansas City. Wow. Where else have I been? Texas. Aaron Franklin. La Barbecue. They're nailing it over there, man. I was in Texas for a while and I ate there more than twice.
I mean, for me, when I think about it, barbecue is a culture that lives kind of, it's within the cooking tent, but it's even bigger than that because you guys are rock stars at this point. People follow you. Tell us a little bit about the book. Who did you co-write it with? Who took the fantastic photographs and everything? Tell us who the people helped you put it together.
Man, first of all, shout out to everybody who helped me with this book. This was a journey that I've never taken. The book is called Rodney Scott's World of Barbecue. Every day is a good day. And the co-author, Lolis Eli, you know, I personally see him as the head author because this man is very talented. His wording in understanding what I was trying to say, helping me lay everything out the way that it's been laid out, did an amazing job, in my opinion. Jarrell Guy, who took all of the photographs in this book. I mean, it's like everything jumped off the pages, just kind of jumps right out at you. And she did an amazing job with this book. And it's one of the biggest things I've ever done. Again, shout out to them. I want to thank them for all of their help, guidance, their professionalism and how to deliver this book. And this book tells the story of Rodney Scott from young childhood to current day. And it kind of takes you through my world of how I grew up, farming, recipes I've encountered along the way, people I've encountered with their styles of cooking that kind of relates to barbecue, as well as some of the people I've worked alongside.
One of the things that I thought about when I went through the book, and the book is amazing, and everything that's happening for you is happening for you for a reason, because you earned it and worked for it for a very long time. The two things I wanted to ask you was, your father, your uncle, when they would have seen, okay, there's a cookbook here, and your son, right? To see on this, where does he fall in all of this stuff? When he sees you on TV, when he sees that my father now has a cookbook, is he too young to understand the responsibilities, or is he queuing with you already? Tell me a little bit about Junior, man.
Well, man, I got to tell you about Braylon. I call him Ike. He is he's learning along the way. He's a kid, you know. He's not wanting to always be out there and cook with me. He's 12 now. I was hoping I'd get him to cook a hog by the time that he turned 12. But he knows how to start the grill. He knows how to make his burger patties. I start him off with smaller proteins with something that he can go from start to finish. He knows how to cover the grill back up and store it. These are a lot of the things that he's learning slowly along the way. He sees us on TV and he says, "Daddy, we're famous." And I'm like, there's a lot of work that comes behind this. But in out of respect to everything that we do, he's still grounded. He's still himself. He's still a kid. He sees us on TV. He don't overreact like he used to. And he loves the fact that at school, his classmates say, "We saw you on Netflix."
Yes, yes, so. Yes. Because I do think that out of all the cooking techniques, right, I do think barbecue, even as great as your cookbook will be, it's still an oral craft, right? You got to touch and feel. And it's an oral craft that, you know, it's not like if your family, you know what you know because your uncle and your dad taught you. I know there was no recipe written down. I know this for a fact, right? So you're the first person in your family that truly went, okay, I have to document this. It's done when it's done. We know how it should feel. So it's a whole other process than, let's say, pastry, where you have to cook with a recipe. So take this oral tradition and actually document it. It's so big because the mystique around barbecue, which is kind of, when something is passed down and it's orally passed down, you know, it has another level of mystique to it that I find very often is very unique to African-American culture. You can find it in the blues. You can find it, in really well-crafted hip hop or jazz. So I feel like there's a parallel path with our history, and barbecuing is that last thing that is, there's a mystique and there's a family tradition there, right?
Yeah, there's a strong family tradition with barbecue. And like you speak of that mystique, a lot of people don't want to tell you exactly how they did it because they want you to think this is the only way that it should be done right or could be done right. And they kind of hold on to these ideas and their personal secrets and techniques because they don't want to share it. But I felt like if we're sharing this great flavor with people, I can share these recipes with you, you know? Sharing a recipe doesn't mean that the person's going to actually go out and do it. Because a lot of times they're busy, they have long days, they just don't feel like it. They can't spare the 12-hour cook time. And they still come to you to say, "Hey, look, I need a pound of barbecue. I need some chickens cooked," or whatever. But I feel like when you're sharing a little bit of that technique, like we did in this book, we're kind of sharing the love of what barbecue does. I mean, look how many barbecues you've attended and remember the vibe, how everybody's there. They're kind of happy. They're laid back. People are sipping on cold drinks and they're sharing stories and sharing their stories through food. And not only are you sharing all of this with these other people, but the pit master is sharing his soul with you through his food.
And I mean, even the word pit master, right? Like we were, as many things as Black people, we were not written into American food history. And very often the pitmaster, if you go back and look at old tradition, the pitmaster was always white, knowing that all the people who did the labor were Black, right? So there's always this sort of weight to that word, right? Because you know the tradition, you know? But in your case, it's something that you really, you really earned it with all the hours and all the you devoted your life to barbecuing and now you're passing it on through storytelling, which is so beautiful. It's really, really important.
Yeah. You know, I want to pass it on. What's funny is sometimes I meet older people and they say, "You're Rodney Scott? I was looking for an old man," because the kind of food that you're cooking and the way that they describe your food, this is a technique that older people do. And they're kind of in disbelief that, you know, I'm not 70 years old and I'm not this old guy with you know, wearing, you know, they have this picture in their mind about it. But, you know, I just always wanted to share that love, to share the techniques that I grew up with, to just kind of give people a sense of peace and happiness for the moment that our barbecue is served at whatever event. Yes, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I always like to say every day is a good day, just to try to pass a positive vibe. And I want to send that through the food. You know, every day is a good day. Just to help change the world.
Oh, that's amazing. And I just love the fact that, I mean, we both come from families where, you know, pretty much at the same time, you know, different parts of the world. But my grandmother passed down the craft of cooking to me. And the fact that I'm still to this day, 40 years later, cooking her meatballs in the restaurant. Right. When I do that, it gives me chills. Like I hear her voice. I hear her yelling at me if I'm not doing that, the temperature is not right. Yes. All of that stuff. Right. But the fact that we're so blessed because we're really carrying out a legacy, and it both humbles me, but it's also something to pass on to my son, you know. So I just feel like we both have that level of privilege and luxury that we obviously worked for, but it's a very special thing to do.
It is, man. Absolutely. You speak of the voices you hear from your grandma and you know, my mom, her sister, one of my aunts, and another cousin that's like 10 years older than I am. I'm 50 this year. So they came into the restaurant and we put everything in front of them. And my cousin said to me, "How did you get the recipe for grandma's cornbread?" And I told him, I was like, "Whoa." And my mom was sitting there and my aunt said, tastes just like mama's. And I'm like, I'm shocked, because I had to take the muscle memory of what grandma used to make and try to remember when it came out of the oven and what it tastes like. And to capture that, and have that recipe written down, and to consistently do that, man, you don't know how many days I've sat in a corner by myself just to say, wow, I'm so appreciative of all the things that I've witnessed and learned growing up. And I get to share it with the world through food.
Rapid fire. What makes good barbecue? What would be a simple tip for a listener? Yeah, let's start with those two.
You know, a couple of things that makes good barbecue. And a good tip for everybody is, for one, be careful. Take your time. Have patience and have fun with it. Don't try to cook your foods too fast. Low and slow is the way to go. Set time aside, prepare yourself, and invite some people over that help give you some of the best vibes that you've ever experienced. So careful with your grill. Make sure you're in a safe area where no sparks or anything are too close to anything combustible. You always want to make sure that your food is kept refrigerated until you need it. Make sure you don't leave it out too long, and have fun. Be careful. Wear gloves. Keep your tools clean. Just take your time and enjoy.
We're queuing. We're eating in Charleston. What are we drinking and what are we listening to?
Oh, man. If we're eating Q in Charleston, we're probably drinking either some sweet tea or maybe some bourbon.
I go for the bourbon. I go for the bourbon with you. Yes.
And we're listening to some upbeat R&B, some music that'll keep the flow going. You know, every now and again, Marvin Gaye will slide in there with some smooth stuff. But we want to kind of have an upbeat vibe going. You know, we want a good feel around what we're listening to, what we're sipping on, and what we're eating on.
Tell us the book's title and where we can find it.
Thank you. The book is called Rodney Scott's World of Barbecue. Every day is a good day. You can find it online with Amazon. You can find it at Barnes & Noble. You can find it at Books A Million. Even check your local bookstores. Support your local bookstores as well, because these guys get just as many books that you will need or want as any of the larger sites.
All right. We appreciate you, Rodney, and congratulations once again. All right?
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate this time and the effort and allowing me to be here. Thank you.
Rodney Scott on This Moment. Boyka, boyka, boyka. Barbecue it is.
Oh, man, you got my mouth watering, bro. Thank you for clearing that up. I do not wish to confuse barbecue with grill any further.
Jason, let's put together a little playlist.
I got one for you right now. One of Nas's first songs ever, live at the barbecue. I think it's Large Professor. Nas drops a hot verse on it. Live at the barbecue, man.
Just like Nas did this time with the JC cut and the Khalid cut, you know? So Jason, I'm going to send you five songs, and you send five songs and put a little list together, right?
You know. Hit us up with your comments, your feelings, your reactions, your suggestions and ideas at thismomentpodcast@gmail.com. Of course, you follow us on Instagram at thismomentpodcast. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.